And you're listening to the Sundance Reel here on KPCW. Well, it was a sad day in 2014 when the poet with the beautiful voice, Maya Angelou, passed away. In their new film, Maya Angelou and I Still Rise, directors Bob Hercules and Rita Coburn-Wax celebrate the woman, the poet, the activist. They join us now in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Well, the film attracted me just because I love listening to her recite poetry. I guess I'm not alone in that sense.
There's legions of you out there, yes. She has an amazing voice, for sure.
And there's a lot of poetry in the film. So we not only had her poetry, but we linked together her voice over the years so that she is the narrator of the film, so that you do get her story in her own voice.
Yeah. And Rita, you had met and interviewed her previously, had you not?
Yes. Well, I used to work for Chicago Public Radio, WBEZ, and I interviewed a lot of women authors, and that was the first time. Isabel Allende, Amy Tan, mm-hmm. Shauna Sink Baldwin, Toni Morrison, and of course, Maya Angelou. And that was the first time that I physically met her and interviewed her on her memoirs. And then later, I worked with Oprah Radio. And she was my host from 2016 to 2010. So I worked with her on a monthly basis, visited her home in order to cull programs for a month for the show.
Yeah. And I came late to the Maya Angelou party here. I mean, it was the 1993 inaugural speech.
Okay.
But Clinton said it was like, oh, my, who is this woman? And what a beautiful poem.
In fact, we have a phenomenal segment in our film about that kind of deconstructs that event. So we were able to interview President Clinton and Secretary Hillary Clinton, of course, Maya Angelou. And there's a wonderful clip on there where she's on the Charlie Rose show right after that. And she explains the poem on the Pulse of Morning. And it's great because there's a lot of information I don't think anybody knew before.
Well, and that's what was so surprising to me, seeing the film, was, you know, I just saw her as a poet, I mean, and an author, and yet she had this amazing creative life, I mean, as a singer and an actress and a dancer. Well, before that, I loved that you showed all of that.
As a filmmaker, there are times when you run into a subject that really opens themselves to not only a documentary, but in this particular case, for whatever backgrounds we brought to the party, the various documentaries that we have done, here was someone who lived history and participated in it and then documented it herself, and then other people documented it. So what we had was this enormous wealth of information. And as you say, we could go from the 50s with her doing Calypso to her being in London on Face to Face, to the inaugural. And so we had a lot of information.
Mm-hmm. And with such an astounding life, I mean, how do you choose to what to cover and what not to leave out?
And that was our biggest challenge, is how to take this enormous story and create a two-hour film that was coherent. And so that was, I think, our biggest challenge. I think what we decided was that we would focus on a few key stories in her life at the expense of a million other things, and those would be kind of universal stories that would help tell the larger story. And so we tried to go in depth on a few things, such as the inauguration, such as this amazing piece where she was in this play, The Blacks by Jean Genet, 1960. And so you get a little more depth of those stories, and you know, that was our strategy.
I think people will probably be moved to read the 7 books about her life, and they would get a fuller picture. But obviously, as we tracked her life, there were certain things we wanted to do, some things that were very familiar, and then we wanted to do some things that were more obscure, so that you would be led into her story. And she really led us. As we begin to excavate the story, we begin to see what needed to be told. And so it, we felt like she not only participated in interviews prior to her death.
Kind of co-directed
along?
Yes,
yes, she was there. She was director, very yes. present. And, uh-huh. and having been a director herself, and she would often call us and say, how are you doing with that documentary? I'm not getting any younger. And we really respected her participation. She wanted her story told well.
Yeah, well, you did a fine job telling it. What do you think that it was important for you as filmmakers to let people know about Maya?
Well, for me, it was the story of it was an inspiring story. It was important for us to tell her story, that the film, in a larger sense, could be an inspiring story, especially to young people, that people struggling with things could look at what she overcame and say, oh, okay, she overcame these enormous challenges. She was raped when she was seven. Mm-hmm. She was in the Jim Crow South in a vicious, racist place called Stamps, Arkansas. Yet she overcame that with grace and dignity. And so that's a lesson that I think people watching the film, especially we're hoping for young people, to watch the film and get inspired by her story.
And for you?
Well, it was very personal and professional for me, being an African-American female and a member of the DGA and knowing that she was the first black member of the DGA and seeing all the struggles that still exist with women telling their stories of their cultures and also you know, oftentimes those stories are being dismissed, and I think we have to address that. And I think we have to address the struggle of a woman finding her voice. So for me, that's universal. Women need to find their voice, and that's what she did. And in the very beginning quote, which she says, you may encounter many defeats, but you must not be defeated. In fact, it may be necessary for you to encounter defeat so that you know who you are. I think that's universal to men and women. But coming from her perspective and from me, it was very personal for me to get that voice out there.
Well, and when you say find her voice, mm-hmm. She gave up her voice for 5 years.
She became a voluntary mute when she was raped at seven. But for those 5 years, what was so interesting was she's 7 years old. She's in a South that is very classical in education. So she's reading Balzac, Guy de Maupassant, Shakespeare. From those 5 years, she reads all the books in the black library and a lot of the ones in the white library.
So it ends up being a very enriching period
for her. Yes,
and
she also listens and claims her body as an ear. She comes out of that and she can do 5 languages in her life. She can speak fluently 5 languages eventually. And she's got this classical education, even though she's never had a degree from a university. She's had honorary degrees upwards of 60.
Yeah, and I was going to say her brilliance. I mean, I don't know if it was a photographic memory or, but a brilliant woman.
That 5 years of being a voluntary mute in the South that wanted to teach you classically, and she lived with a very biblically based grandmother. So she learned the classics, she learned the Bible, she learned some things that were so ingrained in her later that when she called on them, they infused her voice with that type of wisdom.
I didn't really, her life with men, I mean, she wasn't very successful, or maybe she thought she was very successful and that's why she moved on. It was just time to move on. Can you talk a little bit about her, or was it being raped? Was it being abandoned?
Well, we're not psychotherapists, so we don't really know the story, but she had at least 3 husbands that we know of. I think her last husband, Paul Defer, was maybe in some ways the most successful marriage or relationship she had, but even that ended. Her son, Guy Johnson, who's in the film, who is really an amazing person in the film, and he's riveting, he talks about how that was maybe the best relationship, but even that failed, and it's kind of sad that even that didn't work out. So we don't really know. It's hard to understand why these marriages and relationships didn't work out, but she still had a joyful, incredible life. So I think people are surprised at how much humor is in the film. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of laughs in the film because she was very funny. Guy Johnson has an incredible dry sense of humor. And there's a lot of great stories that are humorous as well in the film.
Yeah, I think people will be able to personally and dissect what they can glean from that, because marriage and relationships are difficult as it is. And one of the things that she says is that she wouldn't stay in a relationship where there was no love. She was actually married formally twice. Her marriage to Vus Maki, the West African freedom fighter, was said to be a marriage, but it was more of a common law marriage. And then there are other relationships in the book. So she kept trying.
In our last few minutes, let's just talk about, I mean, what I loved, it was just endearing, her lessons on respect. You have with a young woman asking her a question and calling her Maya, and she's like, oh, no, 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 honey.
It's well, you know, but she did that all her life. Bob and I have been on the receiving end of a lesson from
yes,
her,
we have.
Too, and most people in her presence. But I think when you look at the fact, a very important story in the front is when her grandmother is disrespected by some young white girls who essentially turn their bottoms up to her. But she has to call them Miss Elaine, Miss Carolyn, while they can call her Annie. And so throughout Maya Angelou's life, as a signal of respect, whenever I was with her, I think she slipped once or twice, but she and I was with her for 4 years, she would call me Mrs. Wack. I would call her doctor. The household help would be called Mrs. Chris. She did not want someone to say, hey, Brenda, come here. She always wanted the respect of what that person had to offer. And I think it was ingrained from what she saw with her grandmother. And she kept that her whole life.
Well, and then also pulling aside rapper Tupac, basically, and what a wonderful thing to say to somebody. I think this was when she said, has anybody told you that you're important today?
That you're the best we have, that we were on auction blocks for you, that we worked during the day and stayed up after the night. And that was something that, as she continued to champion young people, write a poem for Michael Jackson's death, have a relationship with Common, with Dave Chappelle. She wrote a poem for Beyonce and Jay-Z's daughter, Blue. She always wanted to stay connected to the up-and-coming generation. That was very important to her.
And I'm sure to them as well.
Oh, absolutely. She was such an inspiration to all those people as well, especially people that were artists and were writers and singers, because music was central to her life. As you saw early in the film, she had a whole career as a calypso singer, and she sang her whole life. She started interviews with us with a brief part of a song, usually. I don't know if that's how she got warmed up or into the zone, but it was just wonderful.
Well, a fabulous film, and I recommend it highly. I mean, can you tell us, is it going somewhere other than festival circuit?
American Masters, and our hopeful date is sometime this fall, 2016. So American Masters.
On PBS, then.
On PBS.
Right. Well, wonderful. Good. So everybody can see it.
And it shows tonight.
Yep. 6:30 at Redstone Cinema,
right.
And then Saturday night also 9 p.m. at the Yarrow Hotel. Those are the local theaters.
That's right.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us.
Beautiful,
thank you. Magical
so much.
Film. You're listening to the Sundance Reel here on KPCW.
Hi, this is Catherine Simos, president of Grand Valley Bank's Park City branch. We have been part of this community since 1998 as a local town bank. We take pride in giving back by supporting KPCW and many other local nonprofits. We have branches in Heber City, Midway, and Park City on Deer Valley Drive. GrandValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.